Welcome to the Raising Your Game podcast. I'm Lewis Hatchett. In my own journey to professional sport, I was always interested in hearing about the insights, the stories, and the ideas behind some of the best in the world. I wanted to know how I could implement those things into my own sport and life as well. So in this podcast, I'll be bringing you conversations from those in the world of sport and high performance, as well as my own experiences and expertise in performance and well-being that you can transfer into your own goals and aspirations. Whether that be in your sport or life, these conversations will give you something that I believe will help you at raising your game. Hey guys, and in this episode and returning back to the podcast is Dan Lawson. Dan is one of the world's best ultra runners. He's a GB ultra runner and he has just completed the Land's End to John O'Groats record. Now, if you don't know what that is running the entire length of the UK. And Dan had actually attempted it a couple of years ago and hadn't succeeded. He fell just a little bit short, but he's given it another go. And he's managed to smash the record, coming in at 9 days, 21 hours and 40 minutes. It's about 830 miles long, just depending on the route you go. But I wanted to catch up with Dan to find out more about why he gave it another go, why he wanted to get back into it, his training, his recovery, what it was like actually doing the run. And we go into all sorts of different things around it. We talk about his recovery, but mainly the mental side, where his a lot around his mind and where his mind goes when he's doing these incredible feats and these grueling record attempts that he always is putting himself under. He is phenomenal. Definitely go check him out. This is an episode that if you are a runner or anyone who wants to just really see what the body and the mind is capable of and listen to someone who has really pushed it to that extreme, then Dan is one to listen to. The audio does kind of break up in little bits and we've managed to restore it. Dan was actually at his non-for-profit warehouse in the UK, Rerun Clothing. And I don't want to hesitate any longer and I want to get straight into this podcast and I give you Dan Lawson. Enjoy. Dan, thank you so much for coming back on, and I'm really happy to have you on after what you've just been doing, because I've been watching all the way over from Australia. I was actually watching your entire run on that the tracker. It was such a cool piece of kit. But how's your recovery going? Have you been running recently?
Oh yeah, I've been running. Yeah, I find it hard not to run. Yeah, so I think I had like 6 days of not running, and then I started up again, just like slowly at first, like a bit of walking, a bit of running, and then so about 3 or 4 days of that, and then and now I'm back. Yeah, I'm back like an hour or so a day I'm doing. So yeah, I feel okay actually.
So those that are probably picking up this episode, like you ran from Land's End to John O'Groats, which is a full distance of, I'm going to let you answer that because I don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah, but I don't really know what it is. It's around 830 miles,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah. So, like yeah. And you did it in nine days, but you'd attempted it before. And this time you actually got, it is the world record. It is now the record of that distance.
Yeah. I beat Richard Brown's time. I think he set it in 1995 or something. So yeah.
And it's been officially recognized now.
Well, it's not been officially recognized because last time we did all of like the official like Guinness stuff, and this time around we didn't. It's too much for the crew to do. So we didn't do it. We were just like, we just want to run and it's not important. We know if we've done it, and it's not important if it's not official in Guinness's eyes. I mean, Guinness, who are they? I don't understand why they're in charge of, they're just like
that's
a
so
brand.
True.
It's just an advertising tool. Yeah. So I don't feel like, yeah, it means any more to be there like we did it, so it's fine. Yeah,
That's so true, actually. Yeah, I never thought of that. That the Guinness World Records, I mean, it's just literally a label on the front, isn't it? You've done it the fastest. You've done it the fastest. Like, that's...
Yeah.
There's no getting around that. So what did it feel like? Well, actually, let's talk about the prep. So your prep leading up to it, like, what was your prep like going into it? Because you'd attempted it, I'm not sure how long ago it was since you had the attempt.
It was almost 2 years to the day, I think, maybe. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe like a week or so out either side. But, yeah, it was like a full 2 years, yeah, since I tried it before.
When you'd finished the last one, how did you feel about the last one? And where was your sort of mind at after not finishing it, not being able to get the time that you wanted and get the record in that 2 years? What was going on in your mind?
I think I always wanted to go back and finish it off. But I don't think I really realized that myself until like a year after I'd finished the one that I didn't manage to complete. So it was only like a year ago that I decided, right, I want to do it again. I'm like ready to do it again. The first one took a lot out of me, actually. Like it must have been like 3 or 4 months it took me to like fully recover from the first one. I think my body took a bit of a battering. I mean, I did stop because I had some weird thing going on where I was retaining fluid and I was puffing up my hands, my face, my stomach, like all over me was kind of puffing up. So I think, I did take physically a bit of a battering and maybe mentally as well. And it did take me a long time to recover. So, yeah, until I was fully recovered, I didn't really think about going back and trying to do it again. But yeah, a year or so ago, I was like, yeah, I definitely want to go back and I want to complete it this time. So.
So does it take a year worth of training to kind of get up to it?
I don't know. I think it's a hard one, like a kind of journey like this, because it's, I think if you run like any other ultra race, like a 100-mile race or a 100K race, you really can, kind of specifically train for it and have like a training, like a few month training block that's kind of right for that race. But it's really hard. I don't think you can train in like a training block for something like this. I think you just have to kind of look at your training block as like 10 years and like everything you've done in the last 10 years has kind of prepares yourself for this, you know, like all of the miles you kind of put in your legs make you ready to be able to, I don't know, just put that amount of miles in your legs, like for 9 days, I think. So, yeah, I don't think you can. In fact, I probably did less miles than I've done for a good few years in the build up to this, in the few months before I took this on. Yeah.
So what were you kind of averaging on a daily basis of mileage? I know we don't. I actually asked you that in our previous chat, and I think you were saying like you would average around 20 miles, sort of 140 a week.
Yeah, so I've dropped right down now. I'm probably not even doing 100 miles a week these days. Yeah, I'm doing a lot less. Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, just not 100 miles.
Yeah, but I do. Yeah, I feel better for it. I feel as fit, but I feel like fresh, much fresher, you know, a lot less tired. And so, yeah, I do feel much better. Yeah.
So there's definitely something in that then, like the fact that you're given probably more recovery for your body and not thinking about mileage. Because I know you use running as a meditative technique. So how's your mind dealing with maybe not doing as many miles as you were to then bringing it back down? Did you struggle with pulling yourself back from training quite a lot, or like running running quite a lot?
No, it was fine because I think running is really important to me in terms of my head and like the stillness in my mind. But I don't think that the amount of running makes that much difference. I just think the kind of consistency is what I need. And in whereas like running brings me that stillness and that calmness in my mind, sometimes the element of training, especially a lot of runners will agree, and maybe like other sports people, you have an element of like OCD around your training. Like it's almost like you feel like you need to run 140 miles in a week to be fit enough to run a race. And you get kind of caught up on numbers and stuff like that. So my simple thing to change that is I only wear a watch now if I'm doing a session where I need to know what my pace is, where I'm doing like a speed session so I just stop wearing my watch completely. And then I've no idea how many miles I do a week. So all of a sudden, it just doesn't bother me. Yeah. Like it's really simple. So
that's dangerous for you, Dan, because you could run for 30 miles and not know.
Yeah. Well, and my coach was like kind of changed. So rather, it used to be go out and run 20 miles or go out, and then he changed it and he just put a time on it, go out and run for 2 hours. So it's nice. I've no idea how far I've gone. You know, you have a vague idea because you know the routes you're going and you kind of know what distance, but there's no chance to get hooked up on like numbers and, oh, I've only done 132 miles this week. I need to do 140. You know, it just makes it a lot easier. And it makes running like more meditative because you just don't. You're just running. You know, you're not training. You don't have your watch on. You're not clocking the kilometers. You're not really paying attention to your pace. You're just running.
I've found that so since I actually last saw you, I've now started doing more running myself, like more long distance running. So I'm probably doing 50 to 60k a week, really putting in a lot more distance than I'd ever done before. I think even when I ran a marathon, I think the most I'd ever done in a week was 25k, and I really undercooked it for a marathon. So I found, but I was actually having this thought to myself, like when I run with my earphones in and I have an audio book going. Usually I have an audio book because as much as I want to try and read and I want to try and sit down and read, like I've found that I actually intake information when it comes from the voice of someone, or I can hear it and I can understand maybe there's a story behind it. So when I'm listening to an audio book, I actually kind of drift off a little bit when I'm running. So I actually run away from, I run out of that pain and that discomfort that I'm in, and it does become a little bit more meditative. But I have been sitting there thinking to myself, going like, God, how mad is it that most of us will train with like a device and feel like we need that device to like get us out on the road and running, when actually like just running without anything on would be so sort of blissful, and you're sort of really in the exercise and the workout for what it is. So I kind of reckon I feel like I will actually get up to that, and I'll start doing that because I just felt like I've got too many distractions and it's like, but you're right, there are days where you're pacing it, and I do need to know what pace I'm doing.
Yeah, when I see runners with like headphones in, it always, I don't know what the word is, because it's not disappoints me. It's not, I just know that, like, especially like new runners that you see, because like during the lockdown, you saw a lot of new runners about, which is wonderful, you know, like maybe like 50% more people were out on the little footpath around Shoreham and stuff around the river. And it's wonderful, but I see runners out with their headphones on, and I feel like they're missing out on what running can give them, because like when you run and especially when you get out of the kind of city or out of the town and you're in nature, then there's not many times we get to really like switch off from everything, is there? You know, like most of the time we have our phone on us, or most of the time, like somewhere in the background there's like a radio on, or there's a television on. So there's information that always kind of like feeding into us. We're always like connected to something. And sometimes like when you run, it's, and you don't take your phone with you, and you don't, oh, it's just a real chance to like check out of like normal life and normal society, and just, yeah, just be there in that stillness. And sometimes I think, I get a bit conspiratorial, and sometimes I think it's a trick from the government that to like tell runners that they need to wear, you know, you need to still be connected when you're running, because yeah. I think you're, because when you're not connected, when you don't have your earphones in, and you're so much freer, you know, you're away from everything else. So I'd like recommend to everyone to get to the point where you just don't need, you don't need to have things in your ears or even take your phone with you when you run. It's your time, and it's just your time to be with you and with like nature, you know?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point, because the one thing I think people misunderstand as well is the pace that you have to, that if you're training for like a marathon, like the easy pace that you're meant to run to get your real base fitness up, there's a misunderstanding of like that every workout needs to be hell for leather, and you need to be up at 80% of your heart rate, you need to be panting, you need to be sweating, you need to be like gone by the time you're finished, when actually you should be able to hold a conversation whilst you're running. And that's not a quick pace at whatever level you're at. So you could have a very, very fast marathon runner, and their easy pace will be very quick, but it's all relative to wherever your fitness is at. And I think that's the thing I've found, is like the actual being able to slow down and take in what's going on. I'm pretty blessed here in Adelaide. There's a beautiful run that I can do. It's about 16 to 21K run that's all along the seafront, and they're even extending it all along, and like the scenery, like down when the sun's setting and stuff like that. And I do actually find myself taking my earphones out and just hearing like the waves crashing, the like the people that are around, like the sea, the dogs that are running around on the beach, and just you're taking in the scenery. And then you're kind of like, well, now this is now for my mind more than anything. And funny enough, I was I've had a lot of work going on with coaching and building the app at the moment, and I have to do something every day. That is my time. Like that is, like you said, it's your time to check out for the day. And I was texting someone, and I was like, oh, I've got a load of work to do. And it's like, well, maybe you should actually not go for a run, and you should do the work. I was like, no, because if I don't go for that, then that's ruined that. It's actually going to ruin the work, because then I'll be in an agitated state for the rest of the day thinking I've got to do it. Like I've had days where I've got to like 10, 11, 12, even 1 o'clock in the morning, and I know I haven't even done my yoga for the day. And I'm like, I'm not even getting it on that pillow until I've done what I'm doing. And I think that's the sportsman routine in me. Like I have to have something going on, but I think that should be, it's a good mindset to get in. It's understanding that exercise is so good for your mental space more than anything, and then past that you it then starts to become a routine. That's where I've found, especially with running recently, like realizing that the pace at which you have to go isn't as fast, and you can take in so much more around you. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because like what you were talking about, I'm totally the same. I need to do something, and I need to run, I need to do my yoga, and it does become habit. But then sometimes I worry, maybe I'll ask you a question, like sometimes, because it becomes habit, it comes routine, and it's healthy.
Just then, gonna hold on, Dan, the audio has just gone a little bit funny. A sec. It might be your earphones or something that's just maybe.
Maybe
there we go. We're back.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. You were saying about asking a question.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That, it sounds like we're kind of the same, you know, I need to run, I need to do my yoga. It makes a difference to my day. You know, it really does make a difference. And it's almost like, and it's a nice routine to get in. It's a nice habit to be in, but is it like, I often ask myself the question, like, where does it tip from being like a healthy routine to something that's like unhealthy and like slightly addictive? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it borderlines, doesn't it? I always sit there and I borderline, yeah. And I think like, oh, maybe I'm a bit mad for doing it this way. And then you're like, well, geez, am I mentally stable or am I mentally unstable for thinking like this? And but I know that it keeps me, the thing that I talk about probably the most with whether it's training or is just the consistency, like you said, the consistency of being able to go out. I know if I'm consistent in the amount of times that I'm training, then I'm consistent in my mood, I'm consistent in how I'm interacting with people, I'm consistent in everything that I'm doing. And that consistency, even when we were looking, if you look into professional sport, like even a team sport, high-end sport, people, the whole idea of like fear of failure and like you're going to fail. One of the biggest eye-openers I ever had was like the amount of down days that I'm going to have, the amount of bad days that I will have. But the idea is like the best performers throughout their career are the ones that, not because they had a bad game, it's because the lows and highs that they had weren't as drastic. So if they were down, they weren't really down. If they were high, they didn't get like really high. They were just very consistent. They kept that way very consistent. And then they knew themselves through their behaviors, their routines, whatever it was that allows them to stay in that consistency. And that's what I just try to do. I try to make sure that everything I do is as consistent as it can possibly be. With obviously tweaks along the way, like there's a part of you that will always try to improve something just to make sure that there's an upward curve, so that you are getting better, but at the same time you're not seeing these huge downs and everything that's bad is really bad, and then when you're up it's just amazing. And yeah, that's the thing I found for more mental side as well.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I like that. Yeah.
I wanted to actually move on to the run, your run that you've just done. So what was the, you talked about about being a year out away from it and starting to think about it and getting, yeah, then probably getting the fire back in your belly to do it. But what was the actual prep that you've done leading up just before? So what was it actually that you learned from the last one that probably didn't get you where you wanted to be, just didn't get you over the line? What was it you felt that needed tweaking, and what was it that you changed?
So me personally, let me just say, so first of all, I had my coach with me, Robbie, as well as my partner and my friend Mick as support. But what Robbie had done, so last time I simply just typed in Land's End to John O'Groats on Google and just pressed the walking route. That was basically my how I navigated around. But Robbie this time round had like really looked into it. He's very good like that, and he'd mapped out the route like really well. So found like, you know, like tiny little shortcuts down little trails and found like, you know, a little bit of trail, maybe like a mile of trail when we could have still been on the dual carriageway, just to, you know, just to take you off that kind of noisy road for a little bit. So that side of it was a lot better. My route seemed to be a lot better. And then like me personally, I kind of had this idea that the more I run, the more I realise that, like, running's just, I mean, it sounds silly, but it's just momentum. It's just, you start running, and if, as far as I can work out with me, if I start running at, you know, like a 3:45 per kilometre pace, and I can, it's quite easy just to sustain it as long as you just keep going at that pace. You're kind of, body will like click into that pace and just keep going. And so what I said to myself is, I'm just at the start of each day, I'm going to start running, and like I'm not going to stop. If I have to grab food, I'll stop and like walk for like 100 meters, but then I'll get going again. I just wanted to keep that momentum like going the whole time or the whole day. And wow. so we did that on the like on the first day, and it was just a it just worked. It worked so well. Like, I think you expend more energy stopping, like starting again. Even like walking, you expend more of energy rather than just like clicking into that certain pace that you need to be running and just kind of stay at that efficient pace. So that was like the big difference. Like, I didn't stop at all and like take even like 2 or 3 minute breaks. And it meant that we finished the days a lot quicker, obviously, and yeah. Then there was so much more time to recover, ready for the next day.
So you actually found that you were just going fundamentally harder for the time you were actually moving, and then just gave you that bigger period to recover.
Yeah, I wasn't even running harder. I was just consistent. I was, like we say, I was just running and not stopping. So last time round, I'd have like a lunch break. You can like stop and sit and eat. And when if I was feeling a bit tired towards the end of the day, I might stop and have a 10-minute power nap and then get back up and run. And all of those little things, just if you add them all together, it can be like an hour, 2 hours that you're adding on to your to your time. And I think having that bigger chunk of time to recover was like a real game changer. Yeah.
So what were you, what sort of things were you eating? What was the stuff that you were fueling yourself with?
So just energy, like it was quite hot actually. It was like the hottest.
It was a heat wave. You chose like the time to do it.
I mean, for England. Yeah, it was, yeah. So, but when that's quite good for me because I like sun and blue sky, just like, it just floods me with energy, you know. So I mean, you know that, like, like blue sky compared to grey sky, it just lifts you, you know. It just lifts your life force. So yeah, I'm quite happy about that. And also, it's hot, so I'm thirsty, so I want to drink more, and that's better because like most of the stuff I was drinking was like energy. Some sort of energy drink, so I'm getting calories in through drinking.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I can't really remember what I was just whatever Charlotte gave me. It was like sandwiches and maybe the odd bit of pasta here and there and flapjacks and it was just a mixture of all sorts of different things, you know, that I was putting in.
So was there, because you had a few people running with you as well. You usually have some support runners. So how far was each day that you were running? Like, what were you mapping out each day?
The first day was just under 100 miles. And then after that, most of them were like 80, around like 85, roughly, like on average about 85 miles a day.
Wow. Yeah, okay. So that's not... And how many are the support runners doing?
Oh, it's brilliant, the support runners. Like, they're, you know, they just come out. I suppose they're just watching the kind of my tracker to where I am, and you just get some, like, really, yeah, just lots of people turning up. And some people will, like, meet you on a, like, a lay-by of, like, a dual carriageway and run 500 meters with you and just say well done and then jog back to their car. And then other people would turn up and you were like, oh, how you doing, nice to meet you, and you'll say to them, oh, how far, you know, how long have you got, how long are you gonna run with us today? And they'll be like, oh, you know, maybe 80k or something.
Wow.
So some people stay for a long time, and others are just there for not so long. But I don't know if I ever mentioned it last time, but it's the best thing about running that particular journey. It's the people you meet and the runners that come out and support you it just makes it really special.
So when you're running with them, are you chatting with them? Are you zoned out? Because I know you can get zoned out when you run. Like my brother is, I think I told the story last time about your 7 days on the treadmill and you were like zoned out and completely not contacting people around you.
Yeah, I'm chatting some of the time, some of the time I'm not. But what what we were saying this time around, it was almost for the, not to get too airy fairy, but it was almost like the universe was really looking after us, because like at each particular time support runners or support runner kind of turned up, they seemed to be the right person for that particular time, you know. So they were really different, but they always seemed to be the right person for the right time. And you were saying, like, do you chat that much? And I think, like, towards the end of the run, obviously you're more tired, so you're chatting less. But I think what you start to notice, but it's funny because you don't really look in the eyes of the support runners, you know, because they're just running alongside you. Or a lot of the time with me, I like to look at like what's in front of me. So a lot of the time they're running behind me, because we're on a dual carriageway, so you can't be running really like two abreast. And what you start to feel towards the end, I think you become like more in tune with like their, rather than like what you're chatting, but their energy. And it's really nice, man. There's some people who come out and they just have this like really like protective energy, and you can feel it, you know, you can feel it that they're there to really like to really help and support you. And then there's others like that come out and their energy is just like a real, it's just really calming. Or there's others that have like a real like upbeat energy, and you can kind of feed off it. So you kind of I found it really helpful, like feeding off the different runners' energies and how they kind of felt kind of running behind me.
I love how you said that the right runner came on along at the right time almost. That sounds really nice. What's the terrain like that you're running on? So you were saying there that you're doing a dual carriageway, which can't be massively safe all the time. But then were there any areas like in, I mean, we're talking about the entire length of the UK, but is there any areas that you knew that were going to come up that were going to be challenging? Were there areas that were potentially challenging that you didn't know about? Or what were the sort of the challenges or the interesting parts of the run that were a bit complicated?
So like to like achieve like the fastest time, you really have to go the fastest route, and pretty much like the fastest route from like across the country is using the A roads. And so pretty much the majority of what you're doing is on dual carriageways or like really busy A roads. So we had one little section in Scotland where you come off for about 15K, 10 miles or so, and you cut across like some nice sort of hills sort of thing. That actually they were really boggy when we went across them, so we're kind of making through bogs. But yeah, the majority of the time it is a road with like lots of lorries and lots of cars, and yeah, you just kind of hug that white line on the kind of slower lane and just hope that the lorries don't get too close to you.
And what was it like as you're getting, because there is some beautiful, I think as you start getting up towards Scotland, there's some beautiful scenery. But I saw a thing, and there was someone who was going alongside you taking some amazing images and some footage as well along the way. And actually one of the images or the videos I saw was you being like carried in and out of a house like after a day, like, you just looked broken. Whenabouts was that?
That was the second to last day, I think. Yeah, luckily we'd found we'd put it on Facebook or something, if someone had a bath that I could use in Aviemore in Scotland, and this chap responded and said yeah, you can come, and because it seemed to be helping my recovery to like get in a bath, and it just kind of relaxed my muscles a little bit. And so Mick, who was one of my crew, I think from like the, maybe from like the sixth day or something. When I'd finished running, Mick was like literally carrying me everywhere. It was, I don't know, it's hard because your body's brilliant, isn't it? And it realizes what it's got to do. So maybe like that day to Avonmore, I had to run maybe like 85 or so miles. And as soon as you get to the place where you need to be, it's almost then it just stops working because it knows it doesn't need to work. So it was so, from like after running like 85 miles and then stopping, it was so hard for me to even walk that Mick was just picking me up most of the time. Yeah. So, and carrying me the places I needed to go. But maybe that was nice and effective because then that helped in recovery. But yeah, it was fair play that chap who let us come into his house because I remember getting in the bath, and then when I got out of the bath, it was like, you know, I was like half fainted on his bathroom floor, and then that made me feel real sick. So I was like dry heaving in his bathroom sink, and then we just left.
I mean, fair play to him. Fair play. How much sleep were you getting each night?
I was getting enough. I think I was getting like if you talk about like proper sleep, maybe I was getting like three hours or so, actual sleep, because it takes a while for your legs to calm down enough for you to sleep. So it takes a good few hours. I don't know what it is, whether they're relaxing. Sometimes I think you stop running, but your legs take another 2 hours to stop running themselves, you know, to kind of just let go. And it's really hard to sleep when your legs haven't had that time to, it's just painful, basically. Your legs hurt so much that you can't sleep. But after a while that kind of subsides a little bit and then you are able to get some sleep. So yeah, I was getting enough sleep. Yeah, it was okay.
So having a bath, was it a warm bath that you were having?
Yeah, I can't handle that. One night I had a warm one, and then I had an ice one, and then had a warm one again. But it just seemed to, if I could get in a bath within like half an hour of finishing, it just seemed to work. I don't know. It just allowed my muscles to relax a bit more, but it had to be a warm one. Yeah, but sometimes too warm, like the day before I completely passed out getting out of the bath. Yeah, just collapsed getting out. So sometimes I was going too warm in the bath.
I wanted to talk about like just coming up towards the end of it, like as you're coming towards the end of the run, how you felt. Actually, I know your parents were near the end as well, so how it felt for you just as you were getting towards the end, like more, I think probably more emotionally, did you know as you were getting towards the end that you were going to do it?
Yeah, so I had the penultimate day was my only kind of real blip. I had in the afternoon of that penultimate day, I was fueling all right. I was eating all right. I wasn't injured in any way. I was just really low on, I don't know what to call it. Chi, like life force, like energy, yeah. You know, I just found it hard to keep that momentum going. So I stopped. I tried to sleep. I have a little bit of a power nap. It kind of worked. But then again, I felt really tired. So then we stopped for 3 hours, and I tried to have a proper reset sleep. Then I got going again, and it just wasn't working at all. So then I think we stopped at about 1 or so in the morning, and I said I'd have another 3 hour sleep and then try and get up and obviously finish it off. I think there was another 87 miles to go or something. So I slept. And it was the best 3 hours sleep I'd had the whole time. I felt like I'd slept deeply for the first time. And I got up the next day, at 4 in the morning or so, and And there was like a 10-minute bit where it was all a bit odd. I tried to start running and I'd forgotten how to transition from walking to running. It was bizarre. Yeah, I couldn't work out how to start running. It was, my crew were there and I was saying, I can't do it. I can't remember how to do it. And it was just weird. And they kind of just left me to get on with it. And then I came up to like a little downhill bit and I started running. And as soon as I started running on that downhill bit, there was 87 miles to go, but I just knew it was like, I just knew I had that feeling that I was just, it was all going to be all right. And so at that point, I just knew I was going to make it. Yeah. All I had to do was run like 22 hours. And I worked it out in my head. Just run, you know, slow, you know, not at any pace, just like pretty slow, but run for 22 hours and everything's going to be fine. So literally at like 4 a.m. on that last day, and I think we finished at like 2 a.m. the next day or whatever. Like I just knew that it was going to be all right. Yeah. I just move. That's all
I
had to
do. What sort of pace are you running when you're doing it?
I think that last day, usually I'm not running it. It's maybe like 10K an hour. So it's like 6 miles an hour. It's not, but
yeah.
The last day I was down to like more like 4.5 or something. I was going pretty slowly. Yeah. But
wow.
It didn't matter. Yeah. It was just, and it'd be interesting to see my pace because it would have just, the graph would have just gone down, down, down towards that, like the last, 5 miles where I was actually. So my mum was there. Yeah, she turned up, and then all of the crew, like in the last mile, they kind of walked. They parked at the sign and they walked up to like run in with me. And it was an uphill bit. I was walking, and then we got to the downhill bit and I started running, and I looked around and they were still walking, so my running pace was the same as their walking pace. And that's how slow I got towards the end. I realized I might as well just walk with them.
And what was it like when you actually got to right to the end, the point that you were looking to get to?
Feel in all of those kind of runs, those longer runs, it's just like you always think it's going to be like really special and like a brilliant moment, you know, like, but it's just a real anti-climax. It is because like I say, 22 hours earlier, I realized I was going to make it there. So you kind of do the celebration in your head then, you know, you're like, yes, I've done it, I've made it, everything's going to be fine. And when you actually get to the sign, it's just, oh, right, that's done, let's just get back to the hotel. There is no emotion, and I think you're so tired as well, is like your, like emotion just takes energy, so your body kind of shuts down that side of you. You don't really have emotion, you know, so it's just everything's kind of matter of fact. So it's there wasn't any like big celebrations. I just touched a sign, sat down, and then got to a hotel and went to bed, basically.
So what happens to your body, because it must take such a toll on your body, what happens to your body after that initial finish, like, so the next couple of days, what's going on physically?
Yeah, I mean, it just amazes me how wonderful the kind of collaboration between your mind and body is, because your body just, I don't know, it just knows. Like you get, so I get to the, after, so I'm running like 9 days, yeah, and I finish day 7, and I don't feel that great, but my body's pretty good. It holds up for me, yeah, because it understands that I've got to run the next day. So I get up and nothing swelled up that much, and I'm you know, my ankles are fine, my blisters are fine or whatever. But when you get on that last day, when you get to the end, and your body realizes that that's it. You don't need to get up and run the next day. It's almost like it just breathes a big, like, sigh or something. And then, like, the next day you get up and you're like, it's ridiculous. Like, my legs are like elephants. My ankles are huge, you know, either side. My feet are so swelled up, I can't get them in my shoes. I hurt more than I've ever hurt before. And it's just amazing how your body holds it together when it knows you've got to get up and run the next day. But as soon as it knows that it's over, it kind of, yeah, it just lets everything go, basically. I find it, yeah. I'm eternally grateful to my body for helping me out like that and not, yeah. Imagine if I, like, on the last day, if I got up and my ankles were like that and my legs were like that, it'd be dreadful, yeah.
So,
go on.
Is there anything that sort of you hone into that sort of, I know we've spoken a lot about recovery, but thinking about what you've said, is a lot of it is kind of trial this, trial that. This is what I kind of feel like today. This is what I kind of, my gut instinct is that I feel I need this. And I kind of have that sometimes. I kind of feel like, oh, right, I really need to have a big sort of massage, or I really need to have a big stretch into that, or I really need to have an ice bath this day. I really feel like I need to have a hot bath this day. Do you kind of go along with that, or is there a strategy that you have that you stick to?
No, yeah, totally. Like you're saying, yeah, just listen to what your body needs. Like, I'd never, yeah, like a few days afterwards, I'd never like used a roller, like a foam roller or anything like that. But I kind of, I just knew that my body, like, I needed to do it. Is that what I mean? On a certain part of my legs. And but what I find really helps with your body, and I know you do a lot of it as well, is especially in terms of that recovery when you are battered from a race or something, is like when I try to do yoga like as soon as possible, because what I find that yoga does, it kind of gives you like an internal examination of yourself a little bit, you know, like you go into certain postures, then you can really tell, like, if your right side is tighter than your left side, or I find it's a really, it's almost like a check-in of like every part of your body to see which bits, you know, what's come out of it okay, and what's, yeah, like needs a bit of work. So yeah, I find that the yoga is like all like essential, like in terms of recovery. And as soon as I start doing yoga, everything starts. I think it increases the kind of rate of recovery. You know, that all my swelling starts to go down, and I don't know. Maybe it's about, you know, I'm getting the blood pumping around my body a bit more. But I find it important, really important in recovery.
I also feel like if your mind and everything is slowing down and getting out of that real sympathetic state and that real stress state, then you're naturally, everything that is meant to be going on in a much more recovered state is going to happen. It's just going to start taking care of itself. It's going to, like you've been saying, the body and the mind is a wonderful thing. How, if you can calm your mind down, it's so amazing how your body will follow. And it would start doing these, and almost vice versa as well. If your mind is stressed and you calm your body down, then your mind will calm down as well. So, yeah, it's a real like partnership that I think what you're talking about there is the self-awareness of it. So you get that. I think that was probably my biggest point of doing yoga and movement and stretching, was that it gave me the self-awareness to understand, right, my left side is so much worse than my right, so I need to take more care into that left side. Like, I've got this bad dodgy hip that's been bothering me the last few weeks, and I thought, oh my god, my knee's all out of whack, but I've just got to spend more time on my left than I do my right. So yeah, that self-awareness, that understanding, and it strengthens that connection between your body and your mind. That's the, I keep pushing that for athletes and And I actually wanted to ask you about your... Sorry, go on. Go on.
No, I was going to say, I don't know where there's anywhere else you could like find that way of getting to know your body as intimately as that. Do you know what I mean? Because I thought you could... Like if you ran and didn't do yoga or didn't, then you wouldn't be aware of that imbalance. You know what I mean, maybe you get injured, but you just, I find it, it would just kind of pass you by, wouldn't it? Yeah. I think it's essential. Yeah. And as well, like it's, you know, like you can work on, I mean, not imbalances, but it's so good for your mind as well, isn't it? You know, you can really tell, I mean, you can really tell when you're stressed and you might not have realized it when you're doing yoga and, it's brilliant. Yeah.
Have you gone into much breathing, like exercises for it to help out your running?
No, I have a friend. No, I don't do that much. No, only within my yoga practice. I've a friend who's shown me some like qigong exercises before, and actually when I was running this time, I was kind of like, I was trying to like summon but increase that qi inside me by using some of the like breathing techniques and that kind of hand movements he's shown me, which kind of it seemed to work quite well. Yeah. But I haven't done that much in the way of breathing. No.
Yeah, I think the most of what you do is definitely mental, and the mental side of what you do is I think you said it before in the last podcast we did, that it's definitely more about your mind when you're doing the distances you're doing compared to your body will get there, but your mind will be. Did you ever have any self doubt on the run? Do you have any doubts or like thinking I'm just not going to get it, or we're not getting it at the moment?
Yeah, I had no like real self-doubt, because I had this beautiful feeling the first night we slept, well, before we started at Land's End, I slept and I woke up that day that we were to start the journey, and I just had this beautiful feeling like a huge like warm hug from like I don't know, just this energy, this like I don't know, like from the universe or something, and I just knew everything was going to be fine. I mean, and that feeling stayed with me throughout the whole thing, and it was only like that last day, no, the penultimate day, like a few hours in the afternoon, like penultimate day, when I kind of lost that feeling for a little bit. So then there was like a few hours of kind of self-doubt. But then after that sleep that I talked about, it just all came back again. I was really lucky like that. It was new. Everything was going to be all right the whole way through.
Oh, mate, I think it's... I also saw that when you were running a big tie-dye shirt, and you were running all your rerun stuff, and you were talking about how you're in a new warehouse. And how's everything going with rerun? And for people that don't know about rerun, just explain it real quickly what you're doing, and also how to get involved.
Yeah, so I mean, rerun, our mission doesn't change. It just changes a little bit. What we're trying to do is highlight, especially in running, and I suppose as well in the other sports industries, that especially running's not as environmentally friendly as we like believe it to be. You know, there's a lot of waste. There's a lot of overconsumption. There's a lot of needless buying, and especially with like the textiles and the shoes, it's like it's running and the equipment's as bad as like the fast fashion you get in like Primark and these shops. So yeah, we just try and highlight that amongst runners, and it kind of spreads out across society, you know, just to like we want to do well for the earth, and we like consume it's about like needless consumption, like don't consume too much, you know, like we push messages about people making their kit last as long as possible and not buying stuff if they don't need it. Yeah, and it's going well. It's going well. In fact, I was running in like these, I had these really old like cotton race finishers t-shirts, but I dyed them with just experimenting. Like there's so many hideous chemicals that go into our clothing. I'm just like learning about that at the moment and how, especially sports clothing, synthetic polyester, and how as athletes, when you wear this clothing and you sweat in it, that you're absorbing all these hideous carcinogens and toxins. So,
wow. So
I dyed those tops with like turmeric and this madder root and like beetroot. And so like natural things in the thing, like if I'm going to absorb anything, then I might as well be absorbing things that are like good for me. So like turmeric's like anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, wow.
Madder roots, anti-inflammatory. So it was quite nice because it's a natural dye. And as I was running and sweating, you could see that it was like the dye was like fading. So I was taking some of it into my, like in through my skin, you know? So yeah. It's been quite fun, like practicing, like using all these different natural things to dye clothes.
How old were your runners that you were running it in as well?
So it was just, they were just my shoes and they were just like, yeah, I mean, I had like three pairs that I was swapping in and out of, you know, maybe. They were like maybe a year and a half old or something, the ones that I was running in, yeah.
Which is going to be a lot of kilometres as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, I think we talked about it before, you don't really need to change that much. There was one point when Robbie, my mate and my coach, was saying that maybe I needed a bit more support, and he had these old pair of trainers that he had, and he said, look, where they were like the ones with the big like wedge on the bottom, and he was like, wear these, give them a go, you know, it might be good for you. And I put them on, and I'm like size 7.5 and he's like size 10, so we're like 2.5 sizes too big for me. And I tripped over like on the dual carriageway like 4 times in an hour, just like falling flat on my face because it was like wearing clown shoes. So we took them off. That didn't last that long. And in fact, the only thing that like still hurts more than anything is that after about 4 weeks or something is my elbow, which I landed on those 4 times. Yeah, it's still killing me. Yeah.
So, I was just looking around for my running shoes because I've now, like, every time I've looked down at my shoes that I've been running in, I've been like, listen to Dan, like, don't change them. You're going all right. Don't change them. Fix you. Don't fix the shoe. And I'm staying with them. Like, I'm fine. Yeah. I think there's probably the actual sole. I'm actually running through the sole of the shoe now because I'm throwing so many cricket balls, or I'm throwing balls at players and in training, my front toe's coming out the front as well because I'm bowling in them as well. So it's taking a little bit of a battering. I don't know how much longer they're gonna go until my toe's coming out the front. But every time. Can you?
Yeah, you can. In fact, at Rerun, we got some funding to get a cobbler's machine. So that's my next thing. Like, I'm learning to resole trainers. Yeah. So we can a lot of the ones we get donated where the soles have gone, we'll resole them and then they can be used again. Yeah.
So then what about like my toe coming out the end? What would I put on at the end? Like stitch more material around it?
Yeah, you can stitch. I've been using with things like that. It depends how big the hole is, because like sometimes I've been embroidering, like I do a nice pattern with embroidery. If it's only a little bit, you can do that. or before, like I've used t-shirts, like old race t-shirts, and like sewn them over the top. And that works, yeah. It's a pity you're not closer and you could send it to me and I could...
I could get them all snazzed up. Yeah, I definitely would. Well, maybe if I'm... Yeah. Maybe when I'm coming back next year, I'll keep these shoes on me and I'll make sure Dan gets them. How many people have you got there with you at Rerun now? I keep seeing stuff coming up. There's people there.
Oh, yeah. So it's me and Charlotte and actually our youngest daughter... starts an apprenticeship with us in like a week's time, so she's on board now and she's awesome. Looking after our, we have like a thing called the shoe bank, which is like a food bank where if runners don't have enough, if they're from like in financial difficulty or they just don't have enough money coming in and they want to run, then they can come to us and we'll give them free kit. We get seconds and like samples given to us by brands and running shops, so we give them new kit with like a slight, you know, there might be a slight defect, there might be a tiny little stain on the shirt or something, so yeah, my daughter's in charge of that, so yeah, it's cool, it's going well.
Awesome, mate. Look, thank you so much for your time. Like, I love catching up with you. I love talking about this sort of stuff. I think what you're doing at Rerun's awesome. Obviously, what you do running wise is awesome. And have you got anything on the horizon that you're thinking of tackling?
I don't know. Maybe next year. I'd really like to run another 6-day race and try and go above the 1,000-kilometer. Kind of wow. Barrier, yeah. So that might be, my plan for next year. Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll definitely catch up for you for that then, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Dan. Thank you so much, mate. Take care. You, have a good rest of the day.
Yeah. See you later, man. Okay.
Cheers, mate. All right. Thanks again for listening to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed that one with Dan. Apologies for that rough connection in places, but if you'd like to get in touch with Dan, you can find him on Instagram and Twitter. It is at The Running Dan. You can also find Rerun Clothing at Rerun Clothing on Instagram. And then there's www.rerunclothing.org. I'm going to leave all the links in the show notes so you can find Dan. Just on another note on Dan, some of you may be aware of the motivational speaker and former Navy SEAL David Goggins, who famously competed in the Badwater 135. It's a big part of his story that he tells. That race that Goggins ran, he came in fifth. And a few years later, Dan went to take it on and he came in second. So it just shows you sort of where he ranks in all of these mad endurance feats that he does. And if you go to Dan's website, he has got this list of all the different feats that he's done. It is incredible. I'm always in shock of what he's able to do. Also, we spoke a lot about recovery with stretching, yoga, talk about breathing. We also talk about like mindfulness of running. And I have created the Sport Yogi app. Now, this is where I found all these methods really helpful for me as a professional athlete and now as an athlete who's training. But I wanted to really deconstruct the way in which these messages were being given out, because I looked for things like yoga, mindfulness and breath work, and it was just too out there. It was a bit too woo-woo for me. So I trained as a yoga teacher, a mindfulness coach, a breath work coach, and I'm delivering these to help you with your sport and exercise. So it's going to help with your well-being and your performance. And you can be one of the first people to download the app on the App Store. If you head over to sportyogi.com, you can register your interest to be one of the very first people to get it. You'll just be added to the email updates so that when it is released and when it is ready to go, you will be one of the first people to jump on this. So as Dan and I were talking about, we saw the value in things like yoga, stretching, looking after your body, recovering, but also really finding ways to help look after your mind in your sport. It's an area that we don't focus on enough. And this app is going to be designed just to do that. Looking after your body and your mind, your well-being and your performance in sport. So head over to sportyogi.com where you can be one of the first to download the app. Anyway, thanks again for listening and I'll see you guys soon.